By taking this tour, you're helping young people in the city of Boston. Our local nonprofit partner, Zoomix, receives a portion of all proceeds of this tour. Zoomix's programs inspire young people to explore the arts, and particularly music, as a means of self-expression. Welcome to Boston, the Athens of America, the cradle of liberty, the headquarters of the revolution. Boston, a little bit of the old world here in the new world. So what are your stereotypes of Boston? The revolution, the Red Sox, prestigious universities with ivy-covered walls. That may be some people's Boston, but it's not the one I'm going to show you. I'm Rob Piles. I live around here and grew up around here. I've bartended in Boston, I'm a writer, and now I live just about a mile away from here, where you're standing right now. I'm going to take you for a little journey to some of the places in this town that mean a lot to me. I'm going to take you through my own personal Boston, down the secret alleyways and the cobblestone roads. So just relax. Kick back. You got a friend that you're traveling with now. All right, now, let's get started. Climb down those steps and go left. Start walking now. You're passing by an iron fence, a black iron fence on your left. This is the Granary Burying Ground, home to many of Boston's heroes. Keep walking ahead. The entrance gate is coming up on your left. Turn left into the graveyard now. Go up those steps. Turn left down the path. Keep walking now toward the church and stop when the path turns to the right. You'll come to the grave of Mr. James Otis, one of the key players in the Revolution, forgotten by many over time. See his grave on the right? Otis was called the firebrand of the Revolution. He was a born orator, a fire-breathing speech spewer. His words were like lightning bolts from the sky. Sadly, as he aged, he made less and less sense. One night, at a tavern, a British official smashed him on the head with a cane, speeding his descent into senility. But for years, Otis envisioned his own death.
I hope when God shall take me into eternity, that it will be by a flash of lightning.
One afternoon, as he sat in his family's farmhouse, a thunderstorm rolled in. James stood and walked outside to the porch. A bolt screamed down, and the firebrand of the Revolution lay dead, killed by lightning. All right, we're going to turn around now and walk back out the graveyard. Pause the tour now and meet me on the other side of the street. Turn left now, and begin walking toward the Beantown Pub sign. The Beantown Pub's on your right. I've lost a little money there playing pool. Now you're gonna cross Bosworth Street. Now you're on the other side of Bosworth Street. Stop at the corner of this brick building. Look across the street, into the burying ground. Do you see the rock in the graveyard? It's just beyond the fence. There's a green plaque on it. There's probably an American flag there too, waving in the breeze. That is the deathbed of Samuel Adams, the man who ignited the revolution.
It does not require a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen to set brush fires in people's minds.
You'll hear more of him in a few minutes, and one of his greatest accomplishments, the Boston Tea Party. To the left lie the victims of the Boston Massacre, 5 men in a mass grave. But more of this terrible night later, when you'll stand where these men were gunned down. Keep walking up Tremont Street now. Go past the Tremont Temple on your right. You see the sign for the Omni Parker House Hotel? It's up ahead. Walk to that. Now you're going to turn in the revolving doors on your right. Go in there, into the hotel. Walk into the lobby, straight ahead. Go to the chandelier in the center of the lobby. All right, now, you're going to turn left. You see the sign for Parker's Bar? It's above those stairs. We'll walk towards those stairs. Go on now. Walk up them to the very top of the staircase. All right, you're at the top of the stairs. Walk over to the right. You see the mirror across the room? Well, if the room's being used, just stay where you are. But if it's not, go over to that mirror.
This mirror used to hang in Charles Dickens' room when he stayed at this hotel. Before Dickens gave his first American reading of A Christmas Carol, he sat in his room and rehearsed in front of this very mirror. Look into the mirror. And maybe, maybe you'll see a shadow of Dickens himself.
Turn around now. You're going to go back down the stairs. The Omni Parker House Hotel is the oldest continuously operating hotel in the United States. Man, these halls are full of stories. And some of the hotel's guests, of course, are famous, like Charles Dickens. But some of the hotel's employees actually rival the guests in fame. You're going to turn left now, at the bottom of these stairs. Go into the Parker House restaurant up ahead. Just say hi to the hostess. Go in and stand over on the left-hand side so you're not in anyone's way.
Here, in this very restaurant, a young African-American busts tables back in the 1940s. His name was Malcolm Little, but the world would remember him as Malcolm X.
The white man knows what a revolution is. How do you think he'll react to you when you learn what a real revolution is?
A couple of decades earlier, a young pastry chef from Vietnam worked in the kitchen here. It was Ho Chi Minh, the future communist leader of North Vietnam, the man who, according to Time magazine, perfected guerrilla warfare and would deal America its worst military defeat. Now, turn to table 40. It's at the back left corner from the entrance. It's a summer evening, 1953. A young Navy veteran is sitting there with his girlfriend. It's John F. Kennedy and Jackie Bouvier, a 23-year-old beauty. Suddenly, John takes a deep breath. He reaches into his pocket and pulls out a ring and places it on her finger. Here, America's royal couple was born, John and Jackie Kennedy. Here was the dawn of Camelot. The world was before them, their trials and tragedies still far, far in the future.
Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by just a moment, please. Something has happened in the motorcade route. Stand by, please.
Okay, you're going to turn around now and walk back out of the restaurant. When you're back out and in the lobby, turn right. You're going to go down the stairs, under that fancy crest. Go out the doors. Turn right. Cool cobblestone alleyway on your right. It kind of gives you a feel of old Boston. Keep going. Up on your left across the street, that fancy old French Revival building, that's the old City Hall. I love that building, man. It's too bad we got too big for our britches and the city government moved out of that building into our new one, which is about half a mile from here. Turn right now onto Province Street, right here.
past that parking garage on the right. Try not to get run over. We're approaching the Province House steps, the only remainder of the old mansion of the Royal Governors of British Massachusetts. The stairs are up ahead, at the end of the street, stripped of their glory, forgotten by the people of Boston. For nearly 200 years, the Royal Governors resided in the house that was here. The steps up ahead led from the mansion out to the Royal Gardens behind it.
So stop here, under that glass lantern. Look at the sign over on the left to see the house that once stood here. Now walk forward to the steps. Just go up to them. Rest your hand on the iron rail over on the left. Feel the cold iron in your hand.
There's a legend about this spot, told by Nathaniel Hawthorne in the story of Howe's Masquerade. Every year, on the same night, when the streets are empty, a strange music begins to play. And then a procession, a ghostly procession, can be seen gliding through the air. All the former royal governors of Massachusetts Colony float through the invisible halls of the Province House to mourn the end of British rule in New England. First, deep-browed Puritan ghosts float past, and then more stately figures slowly floating across these stone steps and disappearing like sea fog among the old royal gardens, now the alleys of Boston. If you're standing with your back to the Province House steps, start walking to the right. This is the tale of the Boston Tea Party, one of the wildest parties this town's ever seen. Take a left up ahead on Bromfield Street.
My name is Meredith Devine. I'm the assistant director of the Old South Meeting House. It is 1773. Britain has passed a law that puts a tax on all tea brought into Boston and gives the British government a virtual monopoly on the sale of tea. And now, to make matters worse, three ships have sailed into Boston Harbor full of, you guessed it, tea. The people of Boston refuse to let it come ashore, or they'll have to pay the tax. But the British royal governor is demanding that he be unloaded. The scoundrel. The men of Boston flock to the Old South Meeting House to debate what action to take. And we're going too, to see what comes of this massive meeting.
Cross over Washington Street. It's the brick road right in front of you here. Just cross it right now. Now, on the other side of Washington, turn left and keep walking down the sidewalk.
You'll see a steeple ahead. That's Old South, a church that doubled as a meeting hall. It was the largest building in Boston at that time. 5,000 colonists are jammed into Old South, with more spilling into the street. The sky is getting darker. A storm is brewing high above that steeple. Inside the meeting house, Samuel Adams and dozens of patriot leaders rage against the British government.
Stop in front of the doors of Old South.
Hours pass, and it is night now. A flame-flickering church packed with patriots. And now, the owner of one of those tea-laden ships, the Dartmouth, Mr. Francis Roch, enters the church. He walks through a sea of shadows and fire. Samuel Adams addresses him.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, Mr. Roch walks among us. Mr. Roch, we have asked you to remove your tax-tainted tea from Boston. Have you agreed to do so?
Sir, I have just returned from speaking with the governor himself.
I see. And what says the governor?
I cannot sail until the tax is paid.
Order! Order, gentlemen, order! We must ask a final question, Mr. Roch. If you're not removing the tea, does this mean you plan to unload it here in Boston?
The governor insists I must unload the tea.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen!
Suddenly, 1,000 candles reflected in the eyes of Samuel Adams.
This meeting can do nothing more to save the country.
The words were a signal. Men dressed as Mohawk Indians leap from the pews. They storm out these doors, faces black and red, hatchets swinging. Here they come, streaking by you. They're sprinting, 100 of them, maybe more, down Milk Street to the right of the church.
To the harbor!
Huzzah! Boston Harbor, a teapot tonight!
I love Old South, man. It's just a crazy building with a lot of amazing stories. If you want to go in, I definitely recommend it. And if you do, you'll get half off your admission if you go up to the person at the desk and use a little code. Tell her, this meeting can do nothing more to save the country. And it's true, you'll get half off, but only if you're on the Boston Odyssey. All right, now, you're going to keep walking down Washington Street. Let's go. Turn right on Spring Lane. You gotta keep a sharp eye out because there's no sign. We like to do that in Boston in an attempt to confuse all the tourists. Turn down that brick alley right here, the one with two black posts in it. Look on your left, on the building wall, for a weathered old plaque about 6 feet up. This is all that marks the site of the Great Spring. That well of water that sustained the first resident of Boston, William Blackstone, and saved the Puritans who joined him here. Imagine them coming here for the first time, kneeling down, splashing water against their faces. Modern-day Boston, this world-class metropolis of technology and medicine, can trace its roots back to this little-known spot.
We came into a deep valley, and there we saw a deer and found springs of fresh water, of which we were heartily glad, and sat us down and drunk with as much delight as ever we drunk in all our lives.
Turn and keep walking down Spring Lane now. Devonshire. Turn left. Now walk to the stoplight up ahead. You're at the intersection of Devonshire and Water Streets. Pause the tour now and meet me on the other side of Water Street. You with me? All right, now. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to walk up Devonshire Street. Just keep going. Listen to a tale of James Michael Curley, the wildest politician in a city of wild politics. Curley was a man of a different era, the kind of guy you'd never see in politics today. That might be a good thing, but it's definitely less entertaining. He was corrupt, but kind. Grew up poor, but was fiercely intelligent. He was mayor of Boston 5 times, and was once elected from a jail cell. James Michael Curley had the heart of a poet. He was the most gifted speaker of his time, but sometimes he let his fists do the talking. Back in 1926, a newspaper editor named Frederick Enright wrote a scathing editorial about Curley. A couple of days later, up ahead on the left, by the sign for the National Park Visitor Center, Enright and Curley just happened to cross paths. Now stop here. Check it out. Here, at about this spot, two of the highest profile men in Boston squared off. And the editor went sprawling to the gutter. That's right. On a crowded street, in the middle of the day, the mayor of Boston punched the editor in the face and knocked his ass out. Curley was a tough son of a bitch, man. A very tough guy. It just happened to occur near the site of the Old Boston Massacre. Later in the day, a chalk outline of a body mysteriously appeared, with the message, "Here marks the spot where Enright fell." The next day, the whole town was talking about the second Boston Massacre. Take a few steps forward now. You're going to walk to that cool old brick building way up in front of you. Yeah, go up there. The old State House.
What do we mean by the revolution? The war? That was no part of the revolution. It was only an effect and consequence of it. The revolution was in the hearts and minds of the people, and this was effected from 1760 to 1775. In the course of 15 years before a drop of blood was drawn. John Adams, Founding Father.
Where, then, did freedom's fire first burn in American hearts? Here, the old State House, the seat of British government in Massachusetts. It is February 1761. On the second floor, up there, 5 judges in white wigs preside over a bitter argument. The British government argues it is perfectly legal for tax collectors to search anyone's private property at any time, without even so much as a warrant.
It is the government's right to know precisely what every man possesses, so the crown might claim its rightful share.
Now, it's the opposition's turn. Arguing against the crown was the man who would die by lightning, Mr. James Otis. Otis rises now, like a flame of fire.
There are greater authorities than the King of England, gentlemen. Even he cannot flout the laws written in the heart of man by our Maker. Every man is his own sovereign, and no other creature on earth may challenge our right to our life, our liberty, or our property. A man's house is his castle, and if he is well behaved, then he must be as well protected as a prince. The freedom of our men and women must prevail, even if it costs the survival of our country.
Who had argued like this before? Who had stood and stared down the King of England? When he sat down, James Otis had spoken for more than 4 hours. 14 years later, shots were fired at Lexington. The revolution had begun. But in some ways, the revolution in American hearts had first found its voice here, in this building, when James Otis stood up there that day. Founding Father John Adams said,
"It was then and there that the child independence was born."
The old State House is now a museum, maintained by the Bostonian Society. It's open to the public, so go inside if you want to learn more. On a less dramatic note, if you look down to the bottom of the old State House, right in front of the entrance to the T station at the bottom right, there's probably a guy with a cart and a red umbrella, Boston Nut Roasters. I highly recommend it, actually. Last summer, I was here with my wife and her aunt. We were walking by, and the sky just opened up. It started pouring, pouring rain. So we jumped under this guy's umbrella. We felt kind of bad taking up the space, so we bought some nuts from the guy. And it was very good. So I highly recommend.
When you're ready, turn right and cross Devonshire Street.
Walk ahead. Now look on the right. There's a small alleyway right there. You see it? There's a single black post in the middle of it. Stand about 10 feet in front of the post and turn around so you're facing the street and so you can see the old State House off on your left.
On this night, innocence will die. 1770. Snow covers the nighttime streets. Tonight, redcoats roam the streets. Gangs of patriots glide through the alleys. 3 days ago, a fistfight broke out between British soldiers and patriot thugs. Tensions are high. Directly in front of you, across that street, once stood the Customs House, the headquarters for British tax collectors. A single British soldier is standing guard at the Customs House. A young boy walks past.
"Hey, your Captain Goldfinch never paid my master for dressing his hair. That cheap bastard."
"Shut your mouth. Captain Goldfinch is a gentleman."
"There's not a gentleman in your regiment." "Help! Help me! He hit me! Somebody help!"
Suddenly, almost out of nowhere, a crowd is forming. Here they come. Sailors, tradesmen, rope makers, massing before the soldier, some swinging clubs and bricks.
"There he is! There's the bastard who hit me!"
"Look at the lobster back! Kill him!
Kill him!"
The crowd is closing in on the soldier, threatening him, surging forward from right here. The men are now ripping ice from the street and throwing it. They're throwing oyster shells and icicles.
"Cease! Cease! Oh, I'll call the main guard!"
He's turning around. He's attaching his bayonet to the rifle.
"Stay back or I'll fire!"
"Fire! Fire, you cowards!"
"Main guard! Main guard! Turn out!"
Now, seven British soldiers appear to your left, marching across the street through the chaos. The British captain shouts,
"Relieve your post, soldier! Forward!"
The British soldiers absorb him and turn around to march back this way. But no, the crowd is blocking their path. The soldiers are forming a semicircle, facing this way, their bayonets aimed at the mob.
"Load your weapons!"
Now, church bells begin to ring. The old signal for a fire. There's no fire to be seen, but people are shouting. A stick flies through the air, smashes the face of a British soldier, knocking him to the ground. And if there's a single moment in the history of Boston that this city was, for a moment, a volcano, this This was it.
Fire!
A shock! A thud in your chest. You reach down, touch your hand to your chest, and it's covered in blood. You're hit. Now the smoke begins to clear, and you are swooning. The moon emerges from the gun smoke and reveals dead men and blood-stained snow. This was the Boston Massacre. 5 men died that night on this snow-covered street. Here, on this spot, the entrance to Quaker Lane, 17-year-old Samuel Maverick was shot down and never got up. The British soldiers may have been acting in self-defense, but it didn't matter to the people there that night. To them, the British government was no longer just oppressive. It was murderous. And the American independence movement had its first martyrs. Now walk forward. Go toward the street. And take a right. You're going to walk down State Street. Now you're coming to Congress Street. You're going to pause the tour now until you get to the other side of Congress. We're walking now down State Street. Look ahead to where all the buildings open up in the distance. That's Boston Harbor down there. This half-mile stretch from the harbor to the old State House behind you was once the most important street in America. And State Street, King Street back then, was lined with colonial shops and coffee houses and taverns. The harbor was actually much closer before the shoreline got built out. Now you're coming to Kilby Street on the right. Just walk over it. Don't get hit by a car. Believe it or not, Boston Harbor used to start just about 100 yards ahead from where you're standing right now. You're passing 75 State Street on your right. Dunkin' Donuts over here on your right-hand side. You're gonna take a right now onto Broad Street. Walk about 10 feet ahead. Go over by those newspaper stands on the left. You see them? Just go stand over there.
Hello, my name's Dickie Barrett, and I'm the singer for the Mighty, Mighty Bosstones. I'm a Boston boy, and I'm proud of my town. But our history's not all heroic.
My father once told this to me, Boston's gritty history, another ruthless battle in a useless holy war. Handed down discrepancies.
Today, Broad Street's full of shops and restaurants. But imagine you're standing here, the year is 1831. Something's coming this way, to your left. 500 people are walking this way. Poor people. They're in rags and they're dirty. It's a funeral procession of Irish immigrants. At the front, 4 men carry a coffin on their shoulders. The Irish have just started immigrating to Boston. They're poor and Catholic, and the native Bostonians, all Protestants, hate them. Tensions have been rising ever since the Irish started coming to Boston. And it's about to blow up. Look to your right. down 200 yards, here comes a group of firefighters coming back from a fire. The Irish and the firemen are headed straight for each other.
Step aside, please. Let the funeral pass.
You step aside. We're walking through.
Could you please step aside, out of respect for the dead?
Hey, Patty, show some respect to the living.
There must have been a terrible quiet for a second. And then, who threw the first punch? Then it happened. Hell came to Broad Street. 1,000 men went to war, blood and rage, crushing each other with bricks and stones. Can you see the battle raging here? The battle lasted for hours. There's a legend. When the battle ended, when night had fallen over Boston and Broad Street was silent once again, the coffin still lay here. It was surrounded by blood and broken glass. Boston's not all revolution and glory, not all tri-corner hats and tea parties. It's also poor immigrants fighting with everything they've got, just trying to survive.
Now turn around and cross State Street. There's a crosswalk right up in front of you, straight ahead. Press pause now and cross State Street. Meet me on the other side. Turn left and start walking up State Street. Oh, you're passing Al's Kitchen over on your right. They have the best subs, man. They are very good. You see up ahead, there's a sign for Merchant's Row. You see it? It's your next right, where the bricks start. So go right now, on Merchant's Row. You were just walking along the brick surface. Ever noticed there's a lot of bricks in Boston? Sometimes I wonder where the hell they all came from. There's a sign for Clark's Bar up on your right. Just keep going. Now look up. You should be able to see a gold dome. Faneuil Hall. It's on the left. Walk toward it. You're going to take a slight left, past this glass dining area up ahead. You're passing that glass dining area right now, on your right. Now there's Faneuil Hall, up ahead, on the left, the brick building. There's probably a ton of people around here right now. It's a big tourist area. Keep walking straight ahead, over the cobblestones. I hope you're not wearing high heels right now. I have seen a lot of ladies twist their ankles here, particularly on a Saturday night when the bars let out. Imagine all the people over the years who have twisted their ankles on these cobblestones. Keep walking straight, so Faneuil Hall is on your left, and the columns of Quincy Market are on your right. Just keep walking straight ahead. Keep walking over the bricks. If you look straight ahead, across the street up there, you'll see a Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah, another one. We have a lot of Dunkin' Donuts here. There's also a salon, a hair salon or something, across the street. You should be at the street now.
North Street. You're going to pause the tour now and cross the street. If you want to be safe, go use the crosswalk over at the lights on the right. If you want to be Bostonian, run out into the middle of traffic right now. I'm not recommending it.